Good evening. It is Tuesday. It feels like Thursday already. Tuesday, February 10th. This is The Refinery, where grassroots organizations come together to explore the best ways to make conservative messaging work to reach and influence more people. We are live via Google Hangout and text chat every Tuesday at 8:30 Central, or if we have technical problems like we did this evening, a little bit after that. It's 8:45, whatever it is. we're at therefinerieshow.com. where you can watch us live or chat with us live on Tuesday evenings. After that, you can catch us via YouTube or any podcatcher that you prefer. We're on Vigilant Liberty Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app. You can just search for The Refinery. So you can comment on our pages or posts or comment forms to communicate with us anytime during the week and let us know what you want to hear about. So, a little scattered because of technical issues, but that's the way it goes. Anyway, I am Leslie Price with the Conservative Union, and I'm all by myself representing the Conservative Union this evening. We've got our friends on the chat, though. I see Marla out there. From Free Radical Network, we've got J.D. Bryden and Felicia Cravens. And from the Party of Choice, we have Andy Pate. All by himself. His darling bride is somewhere in Dallas. Is that it? He's muted.
He's probably
trying to figure out where the washing machine is and which one is the microwave. What do I do with the pizza box? Am I supposed to take the plastic off before I put it in the oven? I don't know.
I was trying to find my self-esteem.
Oh, wow. That's sad.
Oh, my God. So cute. And I will say I listened to them when they did an hour all by themselves on grassroots radio this past week.
Two hours, wasn't it?
Okay, I only listened to 1 hour. I missed that first hour. So they did 2 hours live, and it was great. They're actually, you know, like professional broadcaster people, not like we amateurs over here. Are y'all going to be doing another hour on grassroots radio this weekend, Andy?
Yeah, we're on Thursday from at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock Mountain Time?
Yep.
Okay, 8 o'clock my time. I could listen. I actually listened to an hour of presidential candidate talk, and that's like a year before I'm even interested in it, but I listened because I love you guys. And it was actually pretty interesting, so there we go. Oh my gosh, we have T. Tillett here from Connecticut. She's also with the Conservative Union. Welcome, T. Good to see you here. Yay, hi. I will say that I did see on the chat earlier that George Timmelson was hoping that this would be a Brian Williams free zone this evening, and I hate to disappoint our fans and actually our one-time hosts, guest hosts, because George has been on with us. I hate to disappoint him, but our first story of the evening is going to be Brian Williams, because we're the media, and the media loves to talk about itself. And when one of our own is taken down, we have to do the Schadenfreude dance. No, wait, that's just me, isn't it? I'm the only mean one. Anyway, it was announced this evening Brian Williams is on 6 months unpaid leave. So I don't know how he's going to – I guess we're going to have to do a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter for him. Not Kickstarter, but do a GoFundMe for him to get him through this 6 months without food. I mean – without a paycheck, how's he going to make it?
For him to take 6 months off is basically like a candidate suspending their campaign.
Yeah.
You know, this is if Corey were to inform me, let's see other people for 6 months.
Yeah. Oh,
okay,
well.
I just don't think I'd be getting my old job back.
So you're not going to mark Brian Williams' return date on your calendar just yet? You don't think he's coming back?
No, I really don't. No, I'm not real confident for him. No.
Yeah, they're gonna find that NBC's ratings aren't that much worse without him than they were with him. And let's see, without Brian Williams, we can save $10 million a year. So okay, bye bye. Anyway, for anyone who hasn't been paying any attention this past week, Brian Williams got in trouble for a decade's worth of bragging about himself, lying about his involvement in it was over in Afghanistan, or was it? No, it was Iraq. Heck, I don't even remember the particulars. He was on a helicopter flying into, oh, it would have been Iraq because he was flying into Baghdad. And as the reports have changed over the past decade, he came under fire or he stared down the barrel of an RPG. I mean, his courage has just really been moving. It's very special. But the truth is, he was not even in the formation with the helicopters that got shot at. So he was completely making it up to make himself look good. And 10 years he's been doing this. And for 10 years, NBC has known that it was a lie. And for 10 years, NBC said nothing. But then when they were caught in their lie by honorable members of the military, they've decided to act all shocked and horrified at Brian Williams. And I'm guessing he's going to go to rehab for mental health issues or whatever it is that's caused him to say these horrible things. And he'll write a book and do a rehabilitation tour, and he'll end up on, I don't know, current TV or something at some point later. He'll never go away. Maybe he and Anthony Weiner will start their own television station.
Weiner and Williams.
Eric Holder is no longer, it'll be Weiner Holder. Get it? We all saw that, right? We all saw those pictures.
The Willie Weiner Holder.
Oh my God.
Willie Weiner Terrible. Holder. Terrible. Willie Weiner Holder. Yes.
Are we really? It's we're 5 minutes into the show and already it's completely degraded. But speaking of completely degrading, Brian Williams was just destroyed by Twitter. I mean, we don't need to show any of the stuff because of just how, you know, how much it happened.
He took more fire on Twitter than he did in Iraq.
Yes, he did. And, you know, everybody was making pictures, everybody was photoshopping, everybody was just Brian Williams memories, Brian Williams war stories, all of them, all of the hashtags just did a thorough beating of the guy. And it's going to be near impossible for him to return, I think, after just NBC is not going to let him. I mean, they're not going to do it. They can't do it just on saving face properties. I don't know. Maybe Brian Williams at a later date can come back after he's properly rehabilitated himself. But NBC, they can't do it. They can't bring him back. And it's just, it's an amazing thing to see happen. And we need to bring this story. We need to remember that this is such a huge, huge thing. And as Leslie said, for many, many years now, Brian Williams has been lying, and not just about Iraq, but about Katrina. I mean, that's something that has been coming out recently. I know Super Mexican had a great couple of blog posts about it, saying that Brian Williams said that he saw dead bodies floating past his hotel room window. And then you have the manager of the hotel he stayed at saying, hey, if he saw floating bodies, he was imagining it, because there were no floating bodies. There was no water. We were in a dry area of the, it's just insane. It's amazing the stuff that he thought that he could get away with. And he did get away with for so many years.
Yeah. And Leslie made the point that they're going to play this off as Brian Williams is a singular bad guy. Right, Leslie?
He's a bad man. He's very bad. Brian is bad. But NBC is good. ABC is good. CBS News is good. Other than that, Dan Rather. Is he in? What network is? I don't watch network news. I don't even know what network he's on. It's not like it matters to me. I assume it's NBC. I don't know. But the network is going to claim that it was that one person, that one Brian guy. And, you know, other than also, well, okay, Dan Rather was a bad person as well. But that was a long time ago. Dude, that was like 2000. So, you know, dude, that was a long time ago. But
what about the lady who, helped Obama in the debate against Romney?
Oh yeah, okay. Well, she was a little bit biased and dishonest as well. But these are all just very isolated incidents. All of them are isolated, singular, unique. All of them are unique. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Go ahead.
It's just the problem is the networks. The problem is the mentality that it doesn't matter what our celebrity news readers say. They can say and do anything they want. They can become part of the story as long as they're serving the narrative, which is whatever the narrative is. It's the liberal cause of the day. But because Brian Williams brings so much money into the network, they are willing to put up with lying because lying is not seen as any kind of a disqualifying trait in a celebrity newsreader. And it really isn't if you just see them as celebrity newsreaders. And they are just celebrity newsreaders. I mean, the guy's been on Letterman 22 times. That's not a hard-hitting, responsible reporter or journalist. The guy's a celebrity.
And he actually was lobbying to replace Jay Leno a few times.
So, they're celebrities. And if you understand that they're just celebrities, I mean, who cares if he lies?
But
they also pass themselves off as serious reporters and journalists.
This is a guy who was in charge, a news editor. This is a guy who had more responsibilities than reading the news on screen. This guy was nominally in charge of what was being reported. And not only that, we talked about this earlier in the evening, the deal with this news organization, there were plenty of people who knew the truth behind this story that were in the news organization and said nothing. So if they try to pawn this off on, oh, it was just Brian Williams and his bad judgment, the best thing to do is to come back with, well, how many people were with him? How many of them knew? And we actually need to keep asking that question. I love the fact that his career is being tanked by his own actions, but that's not where we stop with this.
You know, but two things come to mind. Number one, and I mentioned this earlier, Brian, we got to keep in mind why he was such a moneymaker. He was a moneymaker because he was perceived by the American public when he came on the scene as far more moderate, far less biased than the other major news anchors. That's the truth. In fact, when he first came out, Rush interviewed him and said flat out, Rush, when he was interviewing him, said, you know, I suspect your biases, but I never see them. I don't hear them. And Brian Williams, at least initially, was much better at hiding his bias when he did the news. Now, of course, that was waning. He was showing it more and more as he demonstrated the news. I can tell you, you know, I always say, as a former leftist, which I am, their job is singular. They have one job. Their only job is to help the Democratic Party and shade things in the most subtle ways possible, while activists are out there doing it in heavy-handed ways on purpose. They have to do it in subtle ways. That way, you hit the public from two different directions. It's very effective. All right, that was his job. But the reason he was so popular was because of the perception that he was the much more moderate one. Okay, now the much more moderate one has gone down in flames as an incredible liar. What does that say about the other ones? So I wonder if the other and here's my second point, I wonder if the other networks are going to sit back and not make too big a deal out of this. I mean, they'll obviously make a big deal that one of the giants has fallen. But are they going to kind of go after him some to take advantage of this for their own, you know, ABC and CBS? Which are just, you know, flagging, they're falling apart. I don't know what they will. I mean, they're all on the same side politically. They're part of the same agenda. They do work together as part of the same agenda, but they're after money. So it'll be interesting to see.
Whose slogan was the most trusted name in news? Who was that? Does anybody remember?
Like CNN?
Walter?
CNN, the most trusted name in news. Walter Cronkite was like the most trusted person in America or something, but I thought it was CNN.
I don't remember, but I'll tell you that you will see, if you won't see people you know, from other networks actually going after Brian Williams by name, but you will see some attempts at them to couch their reporting with, you know, slogans that try to reflect that. You know, they've been competing with Fox Fair and Balanced slogan for a long time. Fox got away with that slogan because, comparably, they actually were. So now you're going to have these news organizations position themselves that way. But the point is, of course, we're going to see this again, and we're going to see it a lot. So I don't know how much good it's going to do them.
Can you guys explain to me why CNN, to a degree, I mean, CNN is wildly biased. Okay, CNN is incredibly biased, all right? And I say this as a guy who's been on both sides. You know, when I was, you know, on the left, we knew CNN was in the tank. We knew that they were ours. They were our team. You know, they were our offensive line. Okay, we could, you know, they were paving the way. And yet, if you're out in the workplace or you're at the gym or you're somewhere and CNN is on, why do people generally look at CNN as the most, as even somewhat, I don't know, middle ground? They don't look at the big three that way. Most people know, okay, I'm getting the left. MSNBC, well, nobody watches. I mean, they have no viewers at all. Period. I don't think their families watch them. Okay. But and Fox News, everybody just looks at it as the right, which of course it does skew heavily right with its opinion shows. So why is CNN in any way, shape, or form seen as being in the middle? Can someone explain this?
Yes, three words. James Earl Jones.
Okay, explain.
If you have voiceover, it's the power of that voiceover.
Yes.
It's that voice.
This CNN, is CNN.
The most trusted name in news. It's that guy. You trust that guy.
Honestly, though, CNN began, you know, they first came out around the Gulf War. They've been around maybe 25, 26 years, something like that. But they really took off during the Gulf War, and there was a lot of coverage there that you weren't getting from the main networks. And that made the impression on a lot of people at that time that CNN was more in-depth. And then you could do headline news where you could get everything in 25 minutes or so that was going on in the world. They were doing things differently. They revolutionized what cable news should be, and then they turned into what they are. And, you know, then it was Fox's turn to do that, to change it up, to become something different. And then they, you know, launched these other auxiliary, you know, CNBC, MSNBC. But, no, honestly, I think there's a lot of carryover from the 90s and the early 2000s on CNN's part when they used to have a better news department.
Oh, absolutely. You always remember your first, and CNN was the first 24-hour news network, and the Gulf War was going on, and for people in my generation, that was the first big war. I mean, we had Cold War, and then we had the end of the Cold War, and it was peacetime, and it was all awesome, and then, oh my God, we're actually bombing stuff again. War is happening, and it's happening live, and I can actually come home at the end of the day and sit down on my couch and watch it really happen live. No matter what time it is, and I can sit here for hours and watch the war, and it was fascinating, and that was CNN, and that's what CNN means to us, and we remember Wolf Blitzer reporting from Baghdad, and it was absolutely revolutionary in so many ways, because it was just sort of a time in our lives that was full of import for many of us, and CNN was there. And we trusted it because we didn't know any different. We didn't have, you know, the only other thing we really watched on cable TV was MTV because that was where we saw music videos because, you know, MTV did music videos then. That was fun. but we still have that, you know, I still have that fond feeling and affection for CNN. And even though I don't watch it anymore and I haven't watched it in more than a decade, I still want to believe that it's that.
What's MTV?
Yeah, I don't know. I hid it on my DVR. I hid it from the channel lineup, so I don't even have to scroll past it.
Never seen it.
JD, that first of all, that's cruel. And Secondly, this is why I always say, and I think we all always say, the subtle left is by far the most effective. You know, it is so easy to show somebody, to win somebody on a point or an issue and show them the difference between the left and the right and bring out the stuff that they didn't see. It is so easy to beat up on the big three, NBC, CBS, ABC. It's so easy. It is hard beating up on CNN. Even though they're completely biased, they shade things terribly. They shade things and just they virtually won't show things that embarrass their side until they absolutely have to, while doing it to death. And yet, I got to be honest, it's a real struggle convincing people that they are biased. It's really a struggle exposing them.
That's the point, though, I think, too, is that what conservatives learned about media bias was that there were multiple kinds of them, and one was omission, and another one was slant. And so we had all the proof with the slant that we could ever need, because you would see they would show one part of a story and not another. They would get an unequal pairing on interview shows or things like that, or they would only cover one aspect of a story. But the wholesale ignoring of stories is a harder bias to prove and harder to show people. And honestly, you've got to admit that people are choosing their partisan news sources these days. Very few outlets you can think of that would be considered unbiased and not falling for one side or the other, that are impartial. There aren't as many sources that you can consider that way. People might still have impressions of that, but increasingly media, from new media to traditional media, is finding itself in one camp or the other, which is bringing on the habit of, if you cite a source, it almost is impossible to make a point by using a source, because people demonize the sources as a means of demonizing the information coming from a place that they don't agree with.
Well, actually, that's what hurt us, MSNBC. They went through some turnover, having to get rid of some people because of ratings. And they actually tried having some anchors and people who were less biased or less flamethrowers. You know, they were biased, but they weren't as much flamethrowers. And their ratings tanked in those time slots. Their viewers want hate. And Fox viewers, if they don't get a steady stream, and I know I'm one of them, okay, if I don't get a steady stream of good conservatism on Fox, I will lose interest. And the reason is, I came up with CNN and I saw this, people got tired of being slanted to death, and they finally just wanted somebody to come out and say, this is what side I'm on. They wanted to know where they sit before they see where they stand. Be straight with me. Are you right or are you left? Well, Fox comes out and says, we're right. We're on the right, but we're going to show you both sides as much as we can. And they do it much better.
We're going to come back a little later to impartial news or balanced news reporting. But I think we have to talk, too, about the obvious parallel here between Brian Williams' story and Hillary's story in Bosnia.
Yeah, those are both examples of self-aggrandizement, where they make the story seem so much more dramatic for themselves, that they were in so much more peril. And to back it up, because there are people who don't know the Hillary story, during the war, whatever year that was, somebody chime in and tell me what year that was, but she was on her way to Tuzla in Bosnia. For some reason that word sticks in my brain. And it was just a diplomatic jaunt, and she landed and she said her diplomatic things, and then she came back. Late 90s, 98, that sounds about right, Felicia. But she, as she told it later, they were under fire and she had to run across the tarmac, dodging bullets and dodging sniper fire because it was so dangerous there. I mean, granted, she was trying to make a point that she was on a trip into a war zone and things were dangerous and it was dangerous for the people who lived there. But that was not, in fact, true. She walked across the tarmac and met a little girl who gave her flowers. You know, it wasn't, she was not in any danger ever, at no point. But she kept telling that story to make herself seem braver, to make the situation seem more dramatic. It's clickbait is what it was. It's this. It's carnival barkerism. It's exaggeration. It's what people do to try to get and keep attention. Well, but in her case, she was trying to make herself seem better. But what was really bad for her was when her darling husband was trying to explain away the lies. And he kept explaining away the lies because she said these things because it was late and she was tired and she was confused and she made a mistake. Well, it was actually a repeated lie over and over again. So, Bill, you're wrong and you're lying to us about what she said and how often she said it. It wasn't a mistake. And even if we were to take your story that we shouldn't be concerned about her lying because she was just befuddled and confused. You just said that the woman who was our Secretary of State and who wants to be president now was confused because she was tired way back then, and now she's a lot older. I'm not likely to consider your story and your explanation being anything that shines a good light on Hillary.
You know, go ahead, Fishy.
No, I was going to say we're going to look at some video in a bit about how NBC covered this, actually. Andrew Mitchell, Brian Williams. We can see how they treat the story. The interesting thing to me is that the cover of it, from the coverage of it from NBC, was actually surprisingly detailed in the amount of you know, corrections, I guess, or explaining where she was wrong or where the defense was wrong that Bill Clinton was giving. I want people to look out for several things. The things in this clip that Bill Clinton actually says, I want the people to watch how the news reports it and where they correct the story, and I want people to look at the tone. This is a 2-minute clip we're going to watch. We're not going to get into it until JD's back. We just dropped him. I think he's getting all the tech together. But that's what I'm wanting people to look at. How does NBC cover it? And what are the things that specifically Bill Clinton says in his reaction to being called on this in this story? Those are some things that we can look at and learn from in terms of what the left does when they're confronted with stories like this. But before we do that, definitely wanted to get into the idea that isn't it interesting that we have lefties inventing escapades like this? Why do you think they would do that?
Well, first of all, one reason they would do that is because they are seen as being incredibly weak on defense. And this makes them look like they get the war zone thing.
And that's important to the culture, that we have strong, valorous people. For some reason, the people still like that.
Guys, the entire left is nothing but a guy buying a big vehicle to overcompensate. That is the entire left. All of it.
So we call it the LDD?
Sure. and by the way, do not think that what happened with Brian Williams does not hurt Hillary. It does, because it brings to mind what she did. What she did was going to be much more easily buried without something like Brian Williams doing the exact same thing coming up. Especially in the when you keep in mind that Kerry did it too. This is a big problem, because this isn't going to be like what Obama went through. She's going to be in a much tougher election against a far, far, far stronger Republican ticket. Anything that hurts her hurts her, because she's going to be on the margin as it is.
The fascinating thing to me is the cultural angle, that they feel they have to do these things because they're lacking credibility in this area. And they know that this is a conservative nation that responds positively to people physically being brave in the face of peril, like being in a war zone. We've admired our reporters who've gone and done serious war reporting, you know, for years. But that's just confirmation to me how conservative a nation we still are, that they feel the need to make this stuff up.
Can I say one last thing before we go into the clip? Folks, everything we're seeing from the left, the cover-up by, you know, or the way it's exposed and all this kind of stuff, you know, and how they try to act tough and act like they're war zone-y and stuff when they hate everything about the military. Folks, this is coming from the side that sent James Taylor to serenade France after they got hit by terrorists. Okay? These people despise everything that might possibly protect us. That's all I wanted to say.
I hadn't thought about the James Taylor angle. That's hilarious. And it makes so much sense. So I think JD's got the clip ready. We're going to see if this works.
The Clintons are back in the news tonight, the candidate for president and the former president, because just as the flap was dying down over the non-existent sniper fire on Senator Clinton's trip to Bosnia as first lady, her husband brought it up again and then was promptly rebuked by the candidate. Our report from NBC's Andrea Mitchell.
Just when Hillary Clinton thought she'd gotten past the criticism about her sniper attack yarn, her husband brought it up again in two appearances.
There was a lot of fulminating because Hillary, one time late at night when she was exhausted, misstated and immediately apologized for it. What happened to her in Bosnia in 1995? Did y'all see all that? And you would have thought, you know, that she'd robbed a bank the way they all carried on about this. And oh, they acted like, you know, she was practically Mata Hari, you know, just making up all this stuff.
Except she didn't say it once. She said it three times.
They said there might be sniper fire. Because of sniper fire.
We're told to run to our cars.
Twice at 9 in the morning, not late at night. And she didn't acknowledge her error for 7 days.
From South Carolina on, he's engaged in a number of statements, a number of campaign errors that I think have hurt her significantly.
And as Hillary Clinton got into the rhythm of an aerobics class today, her aides cringed because Bill Clinton blamed her Bosnia mistake on age and fatigue.
Some of them, when they're 60, they'll forget something when they're tired at 11 o'clock at night, too.
The dangerous one.
Undercutting the argument that she's ready to pick up that ringing phone at 3 a.m.
Who do you want answering the phone?
After a talking to from his wife last night, the former president emerged from the woodshed today, duly admonished, but unchastened.
I regret that people like you care more about that than whether she served the troops. And I also regret that there appears to be a double standard about misstatements. But I said what I said. Hillary called me and said, you don't remember this. You were here. Let me handle it. I said, yes, ma'am.
This is not the first time in this campaign Bill Clinton has become the issue. Senator Clinton issued a statement saying she appreciates her husband standing up for her, but this was her mistake, and she takes responsibility for it. Andrea Mitchell, NBC News.
Okay, so I think that's the end of the video. The end of the video, which we never saw, but we always heard. We all heard it. And so the people who listen on podcasts won't notice that there was no video. And, yeah, Bill Clinton making excuses for his wife being old and tired 20 years ago. She's going to be 20 years older and more tired. This, and as George was saying over on the chat, people will have forgotten. By the time elections roll around in a year and a half, people will have forgotten Brian Williams and they will have forgotten the Tulsa Dash. It will be incumbent upon us to remind the public because we will be the broadcasters that matter.
And interestingly, when Bill's response, what I want people to take away from that, his first response when called out about it the day after Hillary got on to him about his statements. His first response is, I regret that you think that is more important than these other issues. Now, that is interesting to me because it shows that sleight of hand, that don't look over there, look over here. And they attempt to make, a hierarchy of importance of issues. Well, it doesn't really matter that there's been sex in the White House and whatever. Everybody lies about sex. But here's something, you know, otherwise in the culture or in the politic that we've got to do, and you're wasting my time with that. It's the same thing here. Here's Hillary, whose credibility is at issue over this, and Clinton decides to make it about a misstatement instead of about her credibility. And he's saying, this is not as important, this minor thing that she did is not as important as these pressing issues. That is a left tactic that I definitely want to address in the future, that misdirection, that inappropriate ranking. I don't think there's anything more important than Hillary's credibility.
Well, I agree, but he has to support the concept that lying is okay as long as it's to protect yourself because, well, he's Bill Clinton. And we as a nation decided to forgive people who lie to defend themselves against cheating. We've decided that we had to decide back in the 90s that it was okay to lie for that. And so it certainly is very important for them to separate lying for this particular reason from the concept of being a liar that you can't trust in general, because we need you to trust us about these things that we're saying are going to be good for you. You know, for a fact and history and evidence and all of this, that the things that we're, the policies that we're proposing are actually going to be bad for you, but we're saying that they're good for you and we care, so you need to believe us. Now, the fact that we lied about pretty much everything else, disregard that. Those are unimportant things. This stuff is more important. Yeah, it's the leftist tactic of, I don't even know there's a name for it. It's distract, divide, the ranking of importance of things. It's all... Our side tends to be more principle-oriented, so we look at lying and say, you lie, and you lied about this, and you lied about that. Well, maybe it's because you're a liar, and so that I can't trust you on other things. And the left doesn't think that way because they're not as principle-based. They're more transactional than we are. And so they look at, so Hillary lied about that one particular thing. That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't tell you anything about her in general.
I think it has, in this election, it's going to have much more to do with their messaging against us than their messaging for them. People vote for the left because it robs and steals for them. Okay, that's it. They vote for the left because the left steals for them and tells them to feel good about it. However, to get people to vote against the right, it's very important that they cast the right as the bad guys. Now, it's going to be very hard and very important for them to cast our presidential and vice presidential candidates for the GOP as dishonest, as corrupt. And I think this has just become one step harder for them to do. I think they're going to have a very hard time. Look, you got Jonathan Gruber. You got Obama saying if you want your health, if you like your health plan, you can keep it. If you like your insurance, you can keep it. You're going to save $2,500 a year per family. You've got lie after lie.
You've got Axelrod coming out today in his book saying, right. Oh, yeah, the gay marriage thing. He was always right. In favor of gay marriage. He was just lying in church.
Exactly. And so, by the way, I don't think it's good for them. I don't know why they're doing it. I don't think it's good for them to be letting it out how much Obama lies. Okay, we know that on the right, but for them to make that more mainstream is crazy. So you've got Gruber, you've got Obama, you've got now another newsman who was looked at as the most moderate one, crashing and burning by lying with the exact same lie that Hillary used. This is going to make it harder for Hillary to cast the Republicans as the bad guy. She's going to get her 35-40%. Well, she'll get her hardcore 40% of the vote just because she's going to rob people for people. Okay? But how do you get beyond that? You have to make the right the bad guys. It just became harder.
Here's something else that I don't think we've considered, and it's something that I think I must have read. I know JD did probably a couple of years ago or maybe a year and a half ago, about millennials and the generation that, of course, has helped propel Obama into to the White House and their search for authenticity. Do you think that if that is true of them, if the millennials are in this perpetual search for authenticity, if they're opponents of fake people, and they believe that their heroes are being exposed as fakes, do you think that's going to have any bearing in the future on what they think politically? Are they going to become more jaded and reject politics altogether? Are they just going to be harder on candidates and choose more, more honest or more seemingly genuine candidates? Who among the 2016 field on our side would be able to play into that? I think that's an interesting question to look at. If millennials do have this tendency, and I don't know, that was just some article that I read that caused some debate before. But if you put that together with all of these people in politics that are and news that are lying, I believe that they're going to go for other sources and they're going to go for other candidates. Maybe not ideas. They might not have their ideas move so much, but they might give more credence to a candidate that doesn't seem to be building themselves up to make themselves look good or something. I think it's an interesting question.
I think another big problem that the left has is the age of their candidates for president. Not only are like guys like Walker, Paul, Rubio, and Jindal, not only you look at those four, okay? Because I look at those four as the four most likely to form the ticket. Okay, right now it looks like Walker, Rubio, but it could change. They not only are they all young. Young people, which is good, young people look at that and say, that's a break from that dishonest past. See what I mean? Obama was dishonest. We still like him because, you know, he lets us do what we want with our bodies. But he was dishonest, all right? And Hillary, she looks like the past of dishonesty. Not only are all four of them very honest, but they're also young and very effective, especially in Rubio's case, effective communicators.
I would disagree, Andy, on the point about Obama letting us do what we want with our bodies. He's not proven that at all. That's not something that he's been particularly good on, actually. So, I mean,
you don't think young people see him that way with gay rights?
I don't think so. I honestly do not.
Incredibly heavily pro-choice, up to the point of partial birth and so forth. I mean,
I don't think that that's how they see him. I honestly don't.
Really? Okay.
Really, I don't think that they see him as a proponent of more freedoms in that regard. I just don't. There are a lot of issues in that realm, and I don't think that he's been particularly good on a lot of them. So the thing I want to get back to what Fishy was saying about the authenticity. Being an attractive feature of candidates for my generation. By the way, you know, thankfully there are some awesome young Republicans out there. I just want to shout out to my buddies here in Union County who are hopefully getting some stuff going. This idea of authenticity being a huge factor, being something that we pay attention to is absolutely, to me, I think it's something I've heard a lot about. It's something that the people do care about. They don't even really care about the disagreement so much as long as there is a idea that you're talking to somebody honestly, that this is somebody who is a real person. And I think that's not something that they got to see with Mitt Romney say, and they certainly got a lot more of that feel with Barack Obama. And I think this Brian Williams thing, for any of them, I mean, none of the people in my age group that I know watch Brian Williams. None of them do. I mean, it's hard to find people in my parents' age group that, you know, watch Brian Williams, at least in my area. The people that I know in my circles. But I think that there's a trend to definitely going into the more authentic people, the people who are going to be straight with you with what their perspective is and who they are and what they are and how they talk about these things. And I think that's a good trend. I think that leads to more honest debates. And I do think in the two that you pointed out, Fishy, either they're going to go for the more honest politicians or they're going to sort of throw their hands up and get out of politics. I do think that the former, the throwing their hands up and giving up on politics is a little bit more likely, but I do think there are going to be a lot more who do go after the honest candidates.
Well, I think back to the authenticity of the news sources, and that can kind of loop us back to the Brian Williams, John Stewart angle, because the other big news of the day was a refresh of the story that John Stewart's going to be leaving Comedy Central by the end of the year. But John Stewart is considered one of the primary news sources of the millennial generation. I mean, their secondary news source is Facebook. So they go to John Stewart or they go to their friends / Mark Zuckerberg, because if they're using the news articles that they're given on their Facebook stream, that's a curated feed, but it's not curated by them. It's curated by what Facebook thinks they need to see. And I think they mistakenly trust the authenticity of that, but it's what they do, and it's the way the world works. But they're looking to John Stewart, and they're also looking to YouTube as a news source. And, you know, in a way, that's good, because those are probably more honest in terms of news sources. John Stewart, I hate that he does the whole clown nose on, clown nose off thing, but at least he doesn't pretend to be the super serious news reporter, investigative journalist.
I think you should explain clown nose on, clown nose off for those who don't have that lingo quite down.
Ah, well, John Stewart is a comedian, and his show is it's a satire news show. I mean, it's not really, it was never meant to be a real legitimate news source, but as his fame has increased and he's begun to believe his own lies or believe his own stories or, I don't know, take himself more seriously, people have started asking him what he really legitimately thinks about the news rather than understanding that it's all just a comedy routine that he and his co-writers write as comedy routines. They're making jokes, people, but people look at that as legitimate news source. And John Stewart then, he likes that. He likes being taken seriously. And so he will go on other sources. He will, you know, because this is all an incestuous kind of industry, they will interview one another. And he will go on and opine about something political and take himself seriously and want to be taken seriously as a commentator. But then when anybody pushes him too hard, he falls back on, I'm just a comedian. So he puts the clown nose on if you're pushing really hard and it's something that he's not really sure about, or if you're going to argue with him and he doesn't necessarily think he's going to win the argument, he falls back on just being a jokester. But then he takes the clown nose off because he wants the millennials to take him seriously as their source of the news. Because if they take him seriously as the source of the news, he can shape them.
So basically, I'm a trustworthy source that is never held to a standard.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Must be nice.
Yes, absolutely. That standard that he doesn't hold himself to, that is so often just ignored, it's something that has annoyed me for a long time with John Stewart, and it's annoyed me when I've seen it any time that sort of, oh, I'm serious now, so now I'm serious, now I'm a real journalist, but now I'm not, but now I'm happy. Now it's, you know what, let's just forget about the whole serious journalism thing. I'm a comedian. I'm an entertainer. I'm not trying to you know, give you the news or try to that was one of the things that the moments that really changed my mind about Jon Stewart was he interviewed Jim Cramer a billion years ago, and he went from the change was there. The change from I'm here to be an entertainer to I'm here to be a serious journalist and just chastise people and wag my finger. That switch was so apparent. And the fact that he does this for his own, you know, to promote his own political purposes, his own ideology, it's just, it's frustrating. And it's also frustrating that, sorry, go ahead.
No, just let's make no mistake that what Stewart is doing is advocacy. That absolutely is the case. And whether you try to call it news as advocacy or comedy as advocacy, it doesn't matter. It's all about furthering his agenda. That doesn't mean that he can take the clown nose off and seem serious and unbiased. He might be echoing a lot of questions that people who are not really politically involved would have and attempt to use those to make some points. But there is absolutely always advocacy going on there. No one can dispute that.
Well, you know, when you mock and are able to show video clips and skew them and only, you know, and cut them at just right place before the opposition can make themselves more legit and do these kind of things, when you mock dishonesty, when you mock incoherency, when you mock stupidity, it makes you come off as honest, coherent, and smart. And therefore, when you then turn around and your name is Jon Stewart, and you then turn around and comment on the news, you are very trusted by your fan base because you've spent all this time exposing all the things they dislike and don't trust. So they have no reason to believe that you're doing it. And it's kind of what I always say, he's always on offense. It puts you always on offense because you put the other side first on defense by framing and skewing your depiction of them. And now you can say whatever you want and nobody's going to test it.
And he takes on the sacred cows of the left often enough that conservatives pass around his clips and say, oh, yay, Jon Stewart said something that was favorable to us. Or
In the middle. Time out. No. Jon Stewart never says anything. He always destroys things.
Oh, right.
Jon Stewart destroys X. It's always devastation.
But he does enough of the balanced stuff that people think he's a balanced guy, but you'll note that he absolutely supported Brian Williams 100% because what he did was instead of talking about what Brian Williams said was a lie and it was bad, he immediately talked about George Bush lied us into the war in Iraq. He absolutely diverted, distracted, and brought up something else and made the whole story about George Bush and Iraq. Because the truth is not what's important to Jon Stewart. What's important to Jon Stewart is supporting his friends and his tribe, and Brian Williams is a part of the tribe, and no matter what Brian Williams does, he will always be part of that aristocracy tribe. Heck, his daughter is on Girls. They're not going to banish Brian Williams because he's part of the cool kids. And yeah. Jon Stewart is going to defend the cool kids.
But it's brilliant, and we have to admire the art. It's brilliant what Stewart does. Stewart loves it when he can have, you know, somebody screw up on the left and he gets to pick them apart and do something that'll get YouTubed all over on the right, because subtlety sells. You know, if you look in the Bible, what is Satan called? The angel of light. Okay? You don't come as an angel of darkness to where people are scared of you. You come looking like the light. You have to come looking like the good guy. And the good guy is open and honest enough to pick on his own side now and then. That's all by design. He has to pick on his side now and then. because for one simple reason, he wants you to believe all the other stuff he says about the other side. I mean,
and whenever he picks on his own side, another thing that must be noted
usually leads in, yeah.
Yeah, there's normally quite a few jabs at our side in the process, which is just absolutely lovely. I'm glad that he is no longer going to be on TV for the 2016 election season, because nobody's going to be watching his replacement. So, I mean, it's going
unless
to be...
Unless he takes the job after Savannah Guthrie fails and he becomes the NBC anchor.
He's not going to do that. That's not going to happen. Suffice to say, it won't happen. He won't be anchoring real news. No, it's not. He can't handle that, and no, he's not going to do it. But who can handle real news, and in some cases fake news too? If I can just move this to the side a little bit, we've talked about Fishy and I did a special on the YouTube interviews Obama and the impact of YouTube. We did an interview last month on that. And one of the things that we did in that special was we broke down a video by Philip DeFranco, who does a news show on YouTube, the Philip DeFranco Show, where he talks about, you know, several issues, you know, topical daily type thing, and goes through them, talks about it, and does a really, in my opinion, good job, and does a great job of being unbiased, you know, generally not being too super biased in one direction or the other, or if he does have a bias, he talks about it and explains why, which is good. I mean, that's something that I wish that we could have that. I wish that that Rachel Maddow was explaining exactly the whys behind, instead of just saying this is a good thing and this is a bad thing, and, you know, creating a morality situation there. I want to bring Philip DeFranco up because he, on his show today, covered something that you would not see on MSNBC. He covered a blog post that went up, and in covering it, he made sure very clearly to say that it is not verified. He has not heard directly from the author of the blog post that this is a real story, that's not just trolling, but it's been making the rounds across the liberal blogosphere about a blogger who, upon knowing the gender of her child, aborted it, and she just, the things that she said in this post were absolutely awful about males, and that she couldn't bear to bring the kind of devastation and destruction that a male would most likely bring into the world. And then she had her kid aborted. That story, I'm not sure if it's true. I've looked at the page that was posted on. I'm not sure whether this is a real story or if it's clickbait. But I will tell you that Philip DeFranco covered that. He said, "Hey, I'm not sure if this is clickbait, and I'm not sure if this is a troll, or if it's an actual story." And then he covered the story, and he brought up the exactly what she was saying, and without showing too much bias. At the end of the clip, he asked, and this is the thing that just kills me and is amazing that he did it. He asked, "Is aborting a baby for gender reasons okay compared to the other reasons that you know, a child would be aborted?" And going through some of them, would it be okay to abort? Is this okay to abort a kid because of its gender? That's amazing to me. And this is a news source. This is a guy who is trusted and who is watched by many, many millions of people of my generation. And this is a lot of where we're getting our news from. So, to me, I think that's a huge thing. I think that's a great... I mean, it's a victory to even have this discussion, I think, on this kind of a... from this kind of a source. And it's just... It makes me happy to know that we talked about Philip DeFranco and that he does continue to have this kind of a show.
Well, and I think you've mentioned Philip DeFranco before, and I've never watched his show. I'm not a big YouTube show watcher, subscribe. I watch little clips, but if it's longer than a couple of minutes, I'm like, I don't really want to know about that. I don't know.
Except for the refinery, of course. Except for the refinery, right?
Okay, right, yeah. Although I will say I have watched the Android ad with Roger Miller's song in it over and over and over again because I absolutely love it. But that's just me. I love cute little baby animals. And the orangutan when he falls down at the end. I see myself in that.
YouTube is more than just baby animals. I'm saying this for the benefit of everyone in our audience. YouTube is more than just baby animals being funny.
But because you say that YouTube is, important and stuff, and I kind of listen to you sometimes. Earlier today, I was reading an article on Medium. It was not a political article at all. It was about what a millennial thinks about different social media programs and the different social media applications and how young people are using them. And in it, he mentioned Philip DeFranco as basically the news source for him and his friends and their college sophomores. And so I perked up. I'm like, whoa, okay, so that really is true. It isn't just JD making it up. This guy is apparently really is listened to and taken seriously as a news source. And he mentioned Jon Stewart and Philip DeFranco as the places that they get their news along with Facebook. And that's the way the things that people use as their sources for information when they're in college is totally different than what becomes their news source in a couple of years when they are starting out in their career. And they change over time. So just saying that, gosh, young people use YouTube, so YouTube is the way the world is going to be. No, YouTube is what young people use right now. Young people were all about Facebook before, and now those young people are mid-career, and they're all about LinkedIn now, and young people who used to be into Facebook are now into Instagram instead. So things change, and the medium changes, but we do need to all take into account that broadcast news, I personally never watch broadcast news. I also don't watch cable news shows anymore either. But where people are getting their news is changing. And we're all getting our news from biased sources. We always have been because everybody's biased. But now I think we're seeing that the biased sources are acknowledging their biases. And that's part of their self-definition. Philip DeFranco, I looked him up on Wikipedia. He is listed, his Wikipedia entry says right there, he is libertarian and he is an atheist. He states that about himself right up front. It's public knowledge. And so when you listen to and watch his shows, that going in. So there's more integrity in that to me.
Of course,
somebody
of
who
course, Leslie.
Pretends they have no opinion.
Of what? Course, Leslie. Now that you said that, like everybody's like, oh well, no. So much for him. So much for.
Oh
Philip
right, Franco. Right. He's a libertarian atheist. Oh my God.
He
seriously.
Is. I need to just point out that of the moderate voices out there, he's not a jerk about either of those things, and I think that's important. So I'm happy. I'm happy
well,
with
him. Well, because his show isn't the libertarian political atheist show. It's
no.
The Philip DeFranco show.
No, he is neither the amazing atheist nor is he Adam Kokesh. And that is
right.
A very good
But he doesn't pretend that he has no political views like our old-timey network news guys. They used to say in interviews when asked, they would say, I don't have any political views. I never vote. I don't have a preference. Well, no, you're just a lying scumbag. We know you have a preference. You're just denying it and being dishonest to all your viewers. Now, at least, they're respecting their viewers enough to come at them, just as we respect our viewers enough to say, we are coming at this from a conservative angle, and our goal is to improve messaging for conservatives so that we can get better and so that we can convert more people to our side. Because we trust you to take that information and to evaluate what we say within, through that lens.
Yeah, and something about that I think might come from the fact, and I think this is something that people don't really quite understand, at least outside of the YouTube utilizer, somebody who has subscribed, which you should do to this show. You should subscribe to the Conservative Union channel.
You can subscribe right there on the right-hand side of the website, therefineryshow.com, which is where you're watching it. Right there on the right-hand side.
Down there somewhere. So,
you can subscribe to the YouTube channels.
Is this a pop-up ad?
No pop-ups. That's just porn, Andy. That's just the porn.
Oh, yeah. Now I see it.
We're going to tell Corey on you.
All right. So what I was saying is that people who don't really get YouTube might not understand that Philip DeFranco started out with, no viewers. That's something that Brian Williams never had. He didn't start out with no viewers and then worked his way up. That's what Philip DeFranco did. He started off with very few viewers, started getting more subscribers, getting more people to follow him, and built himself up on YouTube. And I think that's something that he has more of a value for his subscribers. He has more of a value for the DeFranco Nation, which is what he calls his followers, the people who subscribe to him. I think that there is a bit more respect there. I think there's a lot more respect there, honestly, between him and his audience than there is with these other media. There's more of a connectivity between the two sides, and I think that's something that really shows.
So you're saying Brian Williams didn't build that?
Right, but he'll tell you that he did.
You didn't build that. You didn't build that. Good callback. Good callback. Yeah. But also, as we've said before, the whole phenomenon of one guy with a camera and a free YouTube channel. He's got free broadcasting rights. I mean, this is absolutely the printing press that has totally been democratized now. And this is the free market absolutely at work. If people weren't interested in the product that he was selling, they wouldn't buy it, and he would fail. And there are lots of YouTubers who fail and then they come back and create a new channel and get better because they learn from their failure. And that's the free market, baby. Free market. Oh, one of the things we didn't really talk about when we were talking about the abortion story is how much the culture has changed because the right adopted a leftist tactic. Did we really talk about that?
No, we didn't. Please go ahead.
Last week's leftist tactics were on how it's not over until they win, and how even when you think that you've won on a particular issue, they're going to keep fighting and keep fighting and keep fighting. Well, we didn't do this consciously, but when the right lost Roe v. Wade back all those years ago, we didn't give up. We kept fighting. And we kept fighting because it really, really mattered, because 55 million lives matter. And we kept fighting against abortion, even in spite of the fact that the Supreme Court, the ultimate law of the land, had spoken. And there were stories and arguments today about how the Supreme Court should or should not be the ultimate arbiter and, the end of everything. But subconsciously, or I don't know if it was just some synchronicity amongst conservatives and the pro-life movement, we didn't give up when Roe v. Wade was decided, and we kept fighting, and here we are all these years later, and abortion is less popular than it ever was, and late-term abortion is almost universally reviled, although it remains legal only in America. I mean, I say only in America, but that's not exactly true. There are a few countries like us who allow abortion anytime for any reason, but it's actually quite rare globally. Abortion is less popular now than it ever has been, and it's getting less popular every day because science is helping our cause. With a generation of kids who grow up, their first picture is an ultrasound. They recognize and just know intuitively the innate humanity of the human being. And they're seeing that our arguments, which we have never stopped making, we never gave up, we never stopped. And the culture has changed. And as we know, politics is downstream from culture. We keep changing the culture enough, and the politics will flow after it. And what they'll flow the right way, in that the culture will change to disagree with the concept of free and unlimited abortion, and we will outlaw it via the will of the people, not the will of a guy in a robe. And it'll be legislatively outlawed, but over a long period of time, gradually, bit by bit, incrementalism, never give up, all the tactics that the left has done for the last 100 years, we have a bright, shining example of how it works. We didn't do it on purpose. We didn't do it with intention, but we did it in 25 years and managed to get, managed to make abortion much less popular. Yeah, somebody send the link to Ryan so that he can get in if you can. So we have an example of how it really works to change the culture, and then we will eventually change the politics, and that'll change the law. And so when we talk about how the left does it and it's so very successful, we can also remember that the right does it too. We've done it once, and we can remember and do this more and in the future and keep doing it. And I think that was something that I just sort of realized. I just saw today there was an article in Town Hall that reminded me about it. And I wanted to make the point so that we would all remember we have positive news and positive examples of slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah, and that was another reason why I was so impressed with the DeFranco point on it, is that he chose to end the show with it and ask his audience whether or not this was something that should be allowed, that is moral, that aborting a baby based on gender is just like any other reason for aborting a baby. You know, that was a really interesting, I think, and important question to ask his audience, because it gets them thinking about the issue, and that does push the culture among the demographic that watches his show. And I think that could be pretty big.
I think it's great.
Of course, if this story turns out to be a hoax and it turns out to be like right-wing marketing for pro-life, anti-abortion, first off, I hope not.
Oh my God.
I'm massively interested in who thought this was a good idea. I'm not sure if it is, that's the one way it could be, or one of the things it could be. And Fishy,
Fishy had a different
A different idea about this that I think should be discussed a little bit. The idea of it being a trial balloon for the future.
Right. When we've had gender selection abortions been going on, I think Rat in the chat mentioned a while back here that China obviously is one nation that's been doing that. It's happened quite a bit. Sometimes they just didn't bother to wait until, or they just waited until the baby was born if they didn't know the sex, and then they'd take care of it in the, fourth trimester, as it were. But the thing is that it's, in the West, been seen for a long time as culturally taboo. It's not done in the West. Selecting abortion based on gender is completely been rejected by the West for a long time. And it occurred to me that it might be, whether it's a fake story or a real story, it doesn't really matter to this particular thought, but that it might be a trial balloon in an attempt to take the whole patriarchy argument into abortion and say that it's acceptable based on your political belief of what men are, or the patriarchy is, and the likelihood of one's progeny becoming part of it. And those sincerely, quote-unquote, sincerely held political beliefs or whatever, which are technically sincerely held religious beliefs, if you think of the left as a religion, but to take that and to trial balloon that, to try to see if that's going to float, it might be an Overton window thing where you show something so completely out of bounds on the left, and then it sort of introduces the idea and moves things in that direction. I think if it is a trial balloon, though, it's going to be a miserable failure. I think that the shock value, you could just see if you're watching the Philip DeFranco video, which you can find in the link of the show when we're done the full episode. We have all the links that we talk about. You can see the video there. When he's talking about it, you can see him so skeptical and so concerned that this is trolling or whatever. But the idea is still, you can tell, abhorrent to him. And he makes that plain. This is probably not a guy who's not had to grow up in the culture of Roe v. Wade. He's been post-Roe v. Wade all these years, and it was just sort of accepted that abortion is legal. And then now there's these pushes for unrestricted and free abortion for any reason on demand. And I think that his rejection and the general rejection of people are going to mean that if that was a trial balloon, it was a Led Zeppelin, as it were.
Well, it's going to be terribly ineffective because it's one of those classic examples of giving your own extreme, having it fall apart, and letting that lead to other areas of your argument falling apart. I mean, I would look at this person and say this, you know, hypothetically, if they're real. Okay, I'd say, okay, so let me get this straight. Whether or not you think the unborn are babies or simply a fetus, either way, it's an entity. You have to agree to that. And compared to that entity, you are all-powerful. And so here you are, the all-powerful one, destroying this entity because you believe it might one day be dangerous. Now, let's take a step back. You, the all-powerful one, are destroying a helpless entity because you believe one day it might be dangerous. That's ludicrous. You're the one destroying all reality for that entity. You're ending it, okay, because you think one day. Now, as ludicrous as that is, then, of course, that begs the next question. Is it ever right to destroy that entity based on the gender and what you think of the gender it might become?
You know what that is? It just hit me, and this is because I've been watching Game of Thrones again in preparation for season 4 eventually coming out. It's positively medieval. It is absolutely, you know, burn down the house, kill the women and children. That is what that is.
So it's all about power and rebrand. Yeah.
Well, and what if it had been a boy that identified as a girl? I mean, talk about being biased against the trans community.
Absolutely. No, that's a valid point. That is absolutely a valid point.
How did she know?
She can't. So I do hope that that's a real story. I do hope that it's – I mean, I don't hope it's a real story because there's a person who died.
Right.
If it is a real story. But – if it is a real story, then there's significant fallout from it. If it's a fake story, I don't know. It's a head scratcher to me. I'm not sure that I would have done that. It seems like it would be a really, really, really. I don't know. It's because there are people who came out already and defended this this person who we are not sure is real. You know.
Oh my God! Really? Already,
yeah, who have defended her point of view. So. Maybe it's achieved its goal already. If it was a fake story, it's gotten those on the left who agree with it to agree with it, to react in that way and to defend it. But it was a breath of fresh air to see Philip DeFranco talk about it, and that's one of the reasons I have very much respect for Philip is because of moments just like this. And it happened earlier on a different channel that he had SourceFed, really one of the reasons I started paying attention to him. But from that story, before we get out of here, I think that we want to hit our left tactics, and we want to talk about what happened to Tom Tillis.
Yeah, that's a fun one, and a little more lighthearted, and because it started with Tom Tillis using the, you know, reductio ab absurdium, and telling what he thought was a funny story. But the leftist tactic that we're really talking about is that they will twist anything to their ends. And our only defense against it is to not react to what they say, but to make sure that we get the real truth. The story here is Tom Tillis is a new senator, newly elected senator, and great guy. He was talking about the difference between must and should, and he was trying to make the point that in a civil society, we can be self-correcting. We don't necessarily need the government from on high to mandate that we behave in a particular way, because a civil society where people can feedback and choose to be a customer or not be a customer, we will correct those people that behave badly. The story that he chose to illustrate the point in ridiculous fashion was to say, well, you know, let's say we don't have a mandate from the feds that you have to wash your hands, that Starbucks employees have to wash their hands after going to the bathroom. And let's say there's a Starbucks where they don't wash their hands after going to the bathroom. And it becomes known that this Starbucks, they don't wash their hands after they go to the bathroom. Well, people are going to stop going there. You're going to post on Yelp that these people serve you poo omelets. And, you know, it's like poo coffee. So, you know, it's going to be self-correcting. And he told that story to make the point that we don't have to have the government to fix things for us. We can take care of things on our own in a society that is able to communicate effectively. Well,
and let's be clear that he said, I'm fine. We could post a sign that says employees are not required to wash their hands. And the market will take care of it.
Exactly. Starbucks posts a sign on the front door that says, we are a hand-washing-free zone, and yes, then the market will take care of it. Well, the left, they are always on attack, always. So the left posts stories about how Tom Tillis doesn't want people to wash their hands after they go to the bathroom anymore, how he thinks that you shouldn't have to do that, and Tom Tillis is in favor of poo coffee.
Republicans are anti-science. They don't believe in microbes.
Oh, yeah. The stories were horrible about how horrible Tom Tillis is. And it even to the extent that when the story first came out, we're so gullible to this stuff that there was a comment from somebody who is on our side who said, I knew that Tom Tillis was going to be a mistake. He's new and he's untested, and I just knew that he wasn't going to be a good senator for our state. Read the story.
Leslie, that was his mother. She was concerned because he was a boy. She wanted a daughter, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
She should not have even inserted herself into this entire thing. It wasn't helping.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, and look, now he's a part of the patriarchy. Good going.
Way to go, yeah. Tom is one of those evil men. If it had been Tina Tillis, it would have been fine. Because Tina Tillis washes her hands.
For everybody out there, every now and then, Leslie just knocks all the guys off the show. And she's all powerful, and then she comes out and says, I do it because of the danger they might pose. Personally, yes. I just think it's very close-minded. You know, Tillis...
She exercises hangout abortions.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just dehumanizing because we're not really people yet. Not until we do the Bruce Jenner thing and change. But, you know, I just don't... I'm not up to that. And, you know, Tom Tillis is a classic example of somebody who, honestly, look, I think it was poorly worded, poorly chosen example.
No, okay. It wasn't. It was perfectly fine. Don't accuse Tom Tillis did nothing wrong. He did absolutely nothing wrong. He told a silly story to make his point. It's the left that made him look bad.
Leslie, I know he did nothing wrong. No, I know he did nothing wrong, Leslie. Jeez Louise, now she's going to abort me.
No, wait, because
you're buying into the leftist angle.
Time. Didn't we learn from Rush that using absurdity to illustrate the absurd was a tactic that we were more than encouraged to use? That's what he was doing.
I know, but he should have, you know, I got to be honest. I didn't hear the quote. I've only heard about it. Okay,
me
I haven't
too,
actually.
By the way,
but... Yeah, all I'm saying is, you know, maybe he could have picked it better, maybe not. I don't know. Don't care. I just know this. What really matters is how do we respond when one of our own gets called out so quickly by the left?
Right.
And we need to be very quick to research, look into it if we're going to make statements on it. And by the way, if someone on our side says something ludicrous like Todd Akin, we gotta stand up. Okay, we gotta be honest about it. But that's rarely the case, and we have to put things in perspective. Because let me tell you something, the left is going to, with their people, when they get called out, they tried everything to diminish what, you know, guys like Brian Williams and Hillary Clinton with their stories. In something, you know, now with Williams, they couldn't eventually. They couldn't do it. It was just too bad. But we jump on our own, and it's not a very effective strategy. Not at all.
And that's where if you jump on Tom Tillis for saying something badly, I'm going to jump back on you because you're wrong because I'm going to defend my guys. So that was me. That was me yelling at you, Andy.
Well, you're bigoted. I mean, and true. I understand. And I understand you find comfort in that because true. It's so easy. You can just set your arrow in one direction in life and just attack.
Andy is always wrong. I've learned these things.
Well, I am a man. Well, sort
After,
of.
Over the last year, Corey has taught me Andy is always wrong.
Yes,
well,
and you know the sad thing is, the thing that angers me is I've come to realize she's right.
As long as you guys understand that the show is a chicktatorship, we're good.
Oh, there you go. And even more so,
it's like marriage. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And today it's the Texas chicks because even your chick is in Texas, even though she's not on the show. All the chicks are in Texas today, so look out, Andy.
Yeah, everybody who's looking at the screen, our picture, the lower right-hand corner, you see that really hot girl with the brunette hair. That's what dominates me. Okay?
She's just a little thing, but she's the boss.
That is the reason I haven't had an independent thought for over 11 years. And I'm good, and I've been comfortable with it.
Oh, my God. When Corey gets to this part of the show, it's just going to be...
I have to say that Ryan made a good one in chat. He said, Andy, figure out how to come to the show all by himself.
Yeah, we make fun of Andy's technical prowess or lack thereof. And because I screwed things up, Andy actually connected into the Hangout twice this evening. Twice. So kudos to Andy for that. And looping it back to the topic we were on, kudos to us on the right, because this Tom Tillis thing, I think the left tried to do their typical lefty tactic of twisting the story and making it be about how Tom Tillis is a bad thing and aren't all Republicans stupid anti-sites, and it absolutely did not work. It didn't work for an instant. That story, nobody in this chat besides me really even knows this story unless you read about it on Hot Air, because it went nowhere. And that's kudos to us.
Isn't it great, though, that now that we have so many bloggers out there, now that we have so many people who have been through these cycles, been through these stories in the past, and we've been burned by that, that we on the right are on a learning curve that is just amazing, because you see mistakes that were made once that everybody learned from and that most of us are determined not to make again. I am so encouraged that folks on the right are paying attention to these object lessons. They don't have to actually pee on the fence themselves. They can, you know, learn from others' experiences. I think that's fabulous, and I think it's something that we've needed for a long time, but now it's happening. And that is so encouraging going forward.
Yeah, I love seeing lefty tactics fail.
Absolutely. And it's just so much sweeter knowing that it's a new senator in North Carolina that we picked up that seat, and they're not taking it away that easily. They're not going to smear good old Tom for something that's this ridiculous this soon after he's been elected. And thankfully this is going away, and they look foolish because they didn't get the story right. So,
and you know what's interesting is that it all kind of, there's like a through line to this whole show, and it's skepticism of the news. The news was that Tom Tillis was a proponent of not washing your hands. Well, if you're skeptical of that news report, and if you slow down, you take the time, you read about it, you look for the actual facts yourself, because you know enough to mistrust the source, because the source was HuffPo and the other attack sites. So you mistrust that source, you search for the truth on your own, you find the truth, and then you can disseminate the truth, because we all are our own reporters. And then the true story is what gets out, and the true story is what sticks. And, you know, we started out the show with talking about how Brian Williams, who had been reportedly trustworthy for all these years, we find out that he hasn't been. And that's going to, I think, help us long-term all realize that we can't really trust anyone. It's not so much trust but verify. It's mistrust and verify. And then over a period of time, you might learn that there are some sources that you can trust because they have repeatedly met your expectations. But you can't just take a new source that you've never heard of and trust them from the get-go. You have to mistrust everything. And it means the best way to fight lefty tactics, there's no complicated kung fu moves that we need to learn. The solution to all of these lefty tactics is almost always going to be slow down, don't react immediately, investigate, and then realize that your guys are wearing your jersey and you need to support them if you can. And that's really the fix to most of these lefty tactics. I like that it's kind of easy. Of course, yes, it means you have to think rather than react, so that part's hard, but...
Yes, we need to reduce the emotional aspect of it and go and do the work. Do the oh my goodness, it's really, really difficult. I'm going to have to spend 5 minutes reading an article to see what was actually said.
Oh, good Lord, it's not 5 minutes. It's click and 30 seconds. It's 30 seconds.
They'll know.
Here's the thing, too. When you are dealing with emotions, emotions are what you are going to use to pull people into the ideas that you want. It's your hook. It's your connection, your point of connection, what you're using to get other people interested in what you're talking about. It's how you are going to give them something to care about. On your side, what emotion is going to do is cloud your vision and get you, you know, pledging loyalty to places that maybe don't deserve it or sources that maybe don't merit it. So take a moment and step back. Just because something confirms your biases doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Absolutely. There you go.
Amen.
That's a huge takeaway right there.
Amen. So do we think we want to quit while we're ahead, or do we have any more dictator jokes or what?
Quit while we're ahead. Have you listened to the past 10 minutes? yeah. Poor Andy, he's in that hole again, I'm sure. It's gonna be a fun one to hear about what happens in the intervening days between now and the next show.
She worships me.
Oh, great. We're going to have a follow-up next week. And Ryan's going to have to talk a little bit more next week. And I know, and T was here earlier. I'm hoping to talk to her a little bit more between this week and next. She's been attending the leadership, I forget the name. What's the thing that she's been attending, guys?
Leadership Institute.
She's been attending that for the last couple of weeks, and I wanted her to come on and talk about that. I'll try to communicate with her a bit during the week and see if she's ready to share some of what she's learning and seeing with that experience that she's getting, and make us all smarter, share with us the knowledge that she has gained. Okay, Ryan says his headphones aren't working today. Sure, likely story. I think he was just at a basketball game or something. I don't know. We'll get Ryan with his technology fixed, and hopefully I'll get my technology fixed next week, and Corey will be back next week, and we'll probably tell just as many stupid jokes, and I will probably laugh every bit as much, but maybe a little, maybe I'll mute the microphone more often, I don't know. Any parting words for all of y'all? From all of y'all?
Hit the share, the subscribe, the videos that we do during the week. Thank you, everybody who has been in chat and who has been boosters and you know, helped us get the word out. I do have a little bit of interesting news. I've been asked to speak on Thursday about the refinery and the party of choice to a Tea Party group in town, and that is going to be a lot of fun. I've got an hour's worth of presentation to do. So,
which Tea Party group?
It's Katie out here where I live.
Okay, very cool.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting. They are sharing videos of the party of choice through their emails, and that's the kind of thing that we need to do. Folks Excellent. Who don't know, you know, maybe don't interact with people who are a little bit political, but not so much. Give them an opportunity to see what we can do when we put a little effort into that. So I'll be able to report back next week how that went. I'm excited.
Yeah, excellent. And, you know, download the podcast and listen to it on your drive home. And we will be back next week, next Tuesday, the 17th at 8:45 Central Time, which is whatever time it is in whatever time zone you're in. And we will see you guys next week. And in the meantime, remember, think more than you emote when you see all these stories, particularly if they're written by the left. We can win if we try, right?
Oh, you can emote about Jon Stewart, and you can emote about Brian Williams, though. I think that's fun to emote about.
Oh, yeah, mockery is always...
Gloating always mockery, yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone. We will see you all next week.